Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaman Iti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarane Trinadapi Sunichena Tarad Iva Sahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari Haryanama 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 Eva Kivalam Kalau Nastyeva 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 Gatir Anyata Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasari Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare The Benefits of Reading Ramayana. One who listens every day to this oldest epic composed by the sage Valmiki and which is calculated to bestow religious merit, renown, and longevity, which lends support to the Vedas, such a person is completely freed of sin. A king will overcome his enemies and conquer the earth. Men will overcome all difficulties, and women will be blessed with excellent sons and grandsons. Those listening to this epic will receive from Sri Ram all the boons they desire. Through a hearing of this book, all the demigods are satisfied, and one who keeps a copy in one's house will find all obstacles coming to an end. A man offering worship to and reading this historical work is completely rid of all sins and attains a long life. All the demigods are thus pleased, and one's ancestors are gratified forever. Those transcribing this work with devotion are guaranteed residence in heaven, while those hearing it will secure the growth of their family and wealth, supreme happiness, and the accomplishment of all their objects on earth. The gods Gandharvas, Siddhas, and Rishis always listen with great pleasure to the Ramayana while in the heavenly planets. This legend is the bestower of longevity and the enhancer of fortune and the dispeller of sins. It is the equal of the Vedas. One reading even a quarter of it is freed from all sins. Indeed, even if one sins daily, he or she is released from the reactions. And if one recites just one verse of the Ramayana, such a person gets the result of 1,000 Ashvamedha sacrifices and 10,000 Vajapaya sacrifices merely by hearing this great book. Such a person has visited all the holy shrines and has bathed in all the sacred rivers. One who listens to the story of Sri Ram with full reverence roots out all sins and goes to the world of Vishnu. The Ramayana is the unsurpassed form of Gayatri. By hearing it with devotion, one will undoubtedly achieve liberation along with many generations of ancestors. The exploits of Sri Ram are the bestower of all four of life's objects: dharma, religion; artha, economic development; kama, sense gratification; and moksha, liberation. Even hearing one line of this book with full devotion guarantees one's attainment to the world of Lord Brahma. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This is the prologue of the Ramayana, and this webcast today deals with the life of Ravan. Part 1, Vedavati curses Ravan. Coursing through the sky in his celestial chariot, Ravana appeared like a blazing comet. His dark body shone with a brilliant aura. From his 10 heads, his reddish eyes darted about, scouring the mountains below him. With his 20 powerful arms hanging from his huge frame, he looked like five-headed serpents. Seated on a throne of gems, he directed his golden chariot by mere thought alone, and it moved swiftly over the Himalayan range. The demon was out on his conquests. All around him flew thousands of Rakshasas. They were clutching swords, barbed spears, spiked maces, and iron bludgeons. All of those weapons were smeared with blood. Some of the Rakshasas had the heads of tigers, some the heads of donkeys, and others the heads of fierce fiends. Others appeared in their natural forms with large blackish bodies, fearful faces, and with tall pointed ears and rows of sharp fangs. And they also had a mass of red hair on their heads. They wore iron breastplates studded with gems and were adorned with bright gold earrings and other shining ornaments. Surrounding Ravana, they looked like dark clouds with lightning covering the sun. Ravana wished to defeat in battle even the gods themselves. Wanting to establish his supreme power throughout the universe, he had gone to the higher planets and had conquered hosts of Gandharvas and Yakshas, who were powerful celestial fighters. Now he was returning from his victorious fight with Kuvera, who was his own brother and the treasurer of the gods. That lordly deity Kuvera had been made to retreat by Ravan, losing to the demon his wonderful chariot known throughout all the worlds as Pushpaka. The fearless Ravan, overlord of all demons, looked down from the Pushpaka at the forest below him. It was a picture of tranquility. Amongst the trees were many verdant clearings covered with varieties of wild shrubs and forest flowers. Crystal waterfalls cascaded onto many colored rocks. Lakes filled with lotuses and swans shone from the mountain plateaus. As hordes of Rakshasas soared overhead, sometimes the demons would see groups of rishis, ascetic Brahmins who dwelt in those high mountain ranges. They were practicing austerities and worshipping the gods. They would see the columns of smoke rising up amongst the trees from the sacrificial fires tended by the sages. Using their powers of sorcery, the Rakshasas dropped down volumes of blood, feces, and urine, thus defiling the sacrifices. The Rakshasas would then hurl huge boulders and blazing coals, crushing and burning the sages while they sat in their meditation. Finally, the demons with themselves descend, howling and roaring. They tore apart the bodies of the rishis, drinking their blood and devouring their flesh. Ravana admired the Pushpaka as it proceeded according to his will. His brother Kuvera must be very sorry to lose such a splendid vehicle. It looked more like a city of the gods floating in the air than it did a chariot. Numerous cat's eye and crystal pillars ran along its sides, supporting golden mansions inlaid with coral. Large floors made entirely of gems stood upon gold statues of lions and tigers. Groves of artificial trees, shining with golden leaves and fruits, surrounded large ponds crowded with white lotuses. In those clear ponds stood ivory elephants and silver goddesses. Networks of pearls and wreaths of celestial flowers hung all over that transcendental car. It was encrusted with countless precious stones and emblazoned with gold carvings of wolves, sharks, and fierce bears. Sweeping through the skies, it emitted the sounds of celestial music and the fragrance of the Parijata flower, which was known only to the gods. As Ravana sat idly aboard the chariot, gazing around at the magnificent scenery below, he suddenly noticed a lady sitting in meditation. This was most unusual. Women were rarely seen in those mountains. Sometimes the rishis would have their wives with them, but this woman seemed to be entirely alone. Ravana slowed the chariot and moved down to look more closely. Perhaps there were more ascetics nearby. The Rakshasas could use a little entertainment. And if this woman was as beautiful as she seemed at first glance, so could he enjoy a little entertainment. Ordering the Rakshasas to wait in the sky, Ravana himself rose up from the chariot and descended to the ground. He saw the young ascetic girl sitting on a flat piece of soft grassland surrounded by wild flowers. She was glowing with a golden beauty. Her limbs were exquisitely formed, and her full breasts were covered by a black deerskin. Ravan could see the contours of her tapering thighs through the thin cloth covering her crossed legs. Dark locks of thickly matted hair hung down to her waist, framing her white-complexioned face. Her reddish lips moved slightly as she intoned the sacred syllable Om. Her smooth, golden arms were bared in front of her. As she sat with folded palms, her long, curling lashes covering her half-closed eyes. Ravan's mind was overpowered by lust. Who was this youthful lady? What was she doing here in such a lonely place? Did she have a protector? Never mind. Ravan would soon deal with all that. The forest was no place for such a maiden. She would make an excellent addition to his other consorts. by his mystic power, Ravana assumed a human form and approached the ascetic girl. He spoke loudly, disturbing her reverie. "Oh, most beautiful maiden, who are you? Why are you practicing asceticism in this lonely region? To whom do you belong? What fortunate man has you as his wife?" The demon was unable to resist the charms of women. As he gazed upon the alluring form of the girl, he was possessed by increasing desire. He laughed and waited for her to reply. The girl fully opened her black eyes and looked at Ravan. Seeing him as a guest in her hermitage, she spoke respectfully, telling her name. She was Vedavati, the daughter of a powerful sage, Kushadvaja. Kushadvaja was himself a son of the god's preceptor, Brihaspati. Looking down in shyness, she said, "I was born as an incarnation of the holy Vedas. My father was sought by numerous gods and other celestial beings who all wished to have my hand in marriage. However, no one but Lord Vishnu, the Lord of all the worlds, can be my spouse. Thus, I am seated here, absorbed in thought of my Lord and awaiting his favor." Vedavati had meditated for thousands of years. Her body, like that of the gods, neither aged nor required any sustenance. She could understand by her own inner vision who Ravan was and what was his intention. In gentle tones, she said that only Vishnu could be her husband. That inconceivable Lord was all-powerful and all-seeing, and she had chosen him alone. She could not belong to anyone else. Ravana should then continue on his way as before. Ravana laughed again. He was not going to leave behind this jewel of a woman. Hearing the name of Vishnu, his sworn enemy, only made him all the more determined. The demon's voice boomed like thunder. "Your resolution to practice austerity befits only old women. O lady of shapely limbs, why do you waste your fleeting youth in this way? I am Ravana, lord of the Rakshasas, the very mighty race of demons. Become my wife and live with me in my capital, Lanka. That golden city I forcibly seized from the gods. Who is this Vishnu anyway?" Ravana spoke derisively of Vishnu, whom he knew to be the lord of all the gods. The arrogant demon cared nothing for any universal authority. He had been granted boons by Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe, who had so blessed him that he could not be killed by practically any created being, neither god nor demon. Ravana could assume forms at will. Why, Vedavati's mention of Vishnu did not bother him in the least. he stood smiling before the maiden, his eyes full of lust. Hearing Ravana deride Vishnu, Vedavati flared up with anger and rebuked the demon. She told him to leave immediately for his own good, lest he incite the powerful anger of that supreme deity, Vishnu. Ravana smiled. This high-spirited woman would make a perfect consort for him. He stepped forward and grabbed hold of her long locks. Vedavati at once uttered a powerful Sanskrit mantra, which momentarily checked the demon's advance. She lifted her hand and by her mystic power cut through her hair. The Rakshasa fell back in surprise as she spoke furiously. O evil one, I shall now quit this body which has been defiled by your touch. As I have been insulted by you, I shall take birth again only for your destruction. Appearing from the earth, I shall become the pious daughter of a virtuous man. You and your entire race will be destroyed as a result of that very birth. Vedavati closed her eyes and meditated on Lord Vishnu. Seeing him within her heart, before Ravana's very eyes, she invoked fire from within herself. Her body was immediately consumed by flames, and within a few moments, Ravana stood looking at her ashes. Baffled by her words, the disappointed demon rose again to his chariot and continued on his way. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Ramayan Prologue Part 2. Ravana cursed by Nandi. Ravana pleases Lord Shiva. The demon and his Rakshasa followers spent some time in the Himalayan mountains, wreaking havoc among the many ascetics living there. Gradually, they approached the far northern region, where there lay Mount Kailas, the abode of Lord Shiva. As the Pushpaka began crossing that mountain, it was suddenly brought to a halt. Ravana was surprised, and he descended to the ground, surrounded by his ministers, who accompanied him on the chariot. As he gazed around at the brilliant scenery on the mountainside, he saw a strange being with the head of a monkey. The creature appeared dreadful, with a dark yellowish complexion and misshapen features. Although his body was large, he had a dwarfish stature. He was clean-shaven and muscular, and he stood holding a large glowing pike. As he gazed at him, Ravana called out, "Who are you? Where is this region? Why have I been impeded?" "I am Nandi, the servant of Lord Shiva. You have arrived at Shiva's abode, which is inaccessible to all created beings. You will not be able to pass this mountain. Therefore, turn back and go the way you have come. Ravana looked at the strange body of Nandi and laughed out loud. He spoke in a derisory, ludicrous voice. Why should I heed you, O monkey-faced one? Who is this Shiva anyway? Hearing his master insulted only infuriated Nandi. Raising his spike, which shot forth tongues of fire, he exclaimed, O Rakshasa, I shall kill you at once, but I will not do so, as you already stand killed by your own sins. But I this say, as you disregard me in my monkey form, there shall be born on earth many monkeys of terrible strength who will annihilate your entire race. As Nandi spoke, the sound of heavenly drums reverberated in the sky, and a shower of flowers fell. Ravana's eyes flamed in anger. Disregarding the curse, he roared, I shall remove this hill from my path. What do I care for you or your master? The Rakshasa immediately plunged his 20 massive arms deep into the side of the hill. He began tearing it up, and it slowly rose above the earth, shaking violently. As the hill shook, Shiva's consort Parvati slipped from her position and clung to her husband. But Shiva reassured her. Do not be afraid. This is the action of the vain demon Ravana. I shall deal with him shortly. He cannot harm you. Parvati's eyes turned red as she replied to her powerful husband. As this wretch has frightened a woman by his violence, his death also shall be caused by a woman. Shiva stood up and pressed down upon the hill with his toe. Ravana at once felt an unbearable pressure. His arms, which resembled huge pillars holding the hill, were crushed. He let out a tremendous cry that resounded throughout the three worlds, heaven, earth, and hell, terrifying all beings. He was trapped by the weight of the mountain and could not move. The Rakshasa's ministers at once surrounded him and advised him to appease Lord Shiva. We have heard how that all-powerful one is easily pleased. Offer him prayers and seek his compassion at once. Surely he will be gracious to you. Ravan, who had made a study of all the scriptures, began reciting hymns from the Samaveda in glorification of Lord Shiva. But even after 100 years had passed, the Rakshasa still remained trapped. Although in great pain, he continued offering prayers to Shiva. Finally, Shiva relented and relieved Ravan of the pressure. He appeared before the demon and spoke kindly. O ten-headed one, your prayers have pleased me, but do not be so rash ever again. Leave now and go wherever you like. Ravan bowed down to Lord Shiva, who stood holding his famous trident. The crescent moon shone from his head, and a large serpent was coiled around his bluish neck. Shiva gazed at Ravana with his three eyes as the demon folded his palms to address him. My lord, if you are actually pleased with me, then I ask that you give me your weapon. Lord Shiva smiled. Ravana's lust for battle would prove to be his very destruction not before long. So, agreeing by saying so be it, Lord Shiva raised his palm in benediction and immediately vanished from that spot. Ravana felt the mantras for invoking Shiva's powerful Pashupata weapon appear within his mind. Ravana smiled. Who could resist such power? Even he had been unable to overcome Lord Shiva. That great deity was surely worthy of his worship. Ravan mounted the Pushpaka, which had waited in the sky all the time he was trapped. Being unable to proceed further to the north, he turned back south, still accompanied by his numerous Rakshasa forces. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Part 3. Ravan kills the Ayodhya king, Anaranya. As he moved across the earth, seeking further martial engagements, Ravan came upon the city of Ayodhya. This was the capital of the world of human beings. The emperor of the earth dwelt there, and Ravana considered him as fit for a fight. If he conquered this king, then the whole earth would be subjugated. Ravan had little interest in human affairs, for the Rakshasas were a superior race of beings, more on the level with the gods. But the demon wanted to establish his supremacy over all beings. His army of Rakshasas surrounded the city, challenging the emperor to battle. A fierce fight ensued between the two armies of Ravan and the Ayodhya king, Anaranya. Tens of thousands of chariots and elephants came onto the battlefield, along with hundreds of thousands of foot soldiers. Showers of arrows like swarms of black bees fell upon the demons. Anaranya's army threw in the million lances, darts, steel bullets, and iron maces. They swept towards the enemy, shouting courageously with their weapons raised. Ravan's forces used sorcery to appear and disappear at will. Flying in the sky and hurling down rocks and sharp weapons, the king's army replied with showers of swift and deadly arrows. Using powerful catapults, the warriors threw at the Rakshasas large iron darts which whistled through the air. But Anaranya's fighters could not easily engage with the elusive demons. Although they rushed forward, slashing at the enemy with their blue steel swords, the soldiers found themselves cleaving the air. As the Rakshasas rose into the sky, the Rakshasas, who towered over their human foes, would then suddenly descend behind the soldiers, cutting them down with razor-sharp scimitars. Gradually, the demons overpowered the king's army. The battlefield became strewn with the mangled bodies of Anaranya's troops. Blood flowed in waves upon the ground. Heads rolled on the earth. With their golden earrings flashing and their teeth clenched in fury, large and well-muscled arms still clutching broad swords and lances lay severed amidst the entrails of slain warriors. The demons sent up great shouts as they hacked down the king's army. Anaranya himself exhibited great prowess. He knew the secrets of the celestial weapons, and by invoking those divine missiles, he killed innumerable Rakshasas. When the demons hid using their sorcery, he released the Shabda weapon of sound, which found them everywhere they hid. As hordes of Rakshasas rushed at the emperor, he let go the wind weapon, which lifted the demons and hurled them far away. Anaranya was difficult to look at as he stood in his chariot, releasing his weapons. They fell upon the Rakshasa forces like blazing meteors. But the demons far outnumbered the humans. Although hard-pressed by the king, the Rakshasas responded with more and more sorcery, vanishing into the sky and entering the earth. Eventually, Ravana's hordes completely annihilated their enemies, and Anaranya stood alone against the demons. Seeing all his forces consumed like so many moths entering a fire, the emperor became infuriated. He went towards Ravan, who had stood by in a war chariot, as his Rakshasas fought with the soldiers. Anaranya took up his great bow and let loose 800 fierce arrows, which sped like flames of fire towards Ravan. By the incantations of Anaranya, those arrows were imbued with the power of thunderbolts. The king fired them so swiftly that they flew in a long line, almost end to end. They struck Ravana furiously on his head and chest, sounding like claps of thunder. But the demon did not flinch in the least. Angered by the king's sudden attack, Ravana took up a terrible-looking mace. He whirled it above his head with such force that it glowed bright orange and threw off tongues of fire. He flew with the speed of a tempest towards the emperor and struck him a great blow on the forehead. The king fell from his chariot and lay bleeding on the ground. The Rakshasa began laughing and deriding the fallen monarch.
Ha! Ha! Ha!
What is the use of fighting with Ravan? There is no one who can face me in battle and remain alive. Clearly, you are a foolish man, too much addicted to wine and women. Thus, you have not heard of my unassailable power. Ravan continued insulting the dying king, mocking his ancestral line, in which the Earth's emperors had appeared for thousands of years. Anaranya looked up at the demon with eyes red from anger. Gasping for breath as his life slipped away, he spoke with difficulty. I have not been killed by you, O vile Rakshasa. Death is certain and comes to all beings according to their destiny. No one can be killed before their fate decrees it, nor can anyone be saved when their time has arrived. I am thus killed by my own fate. Do not indulge in self-praise, Ravana, for your own death will soon come. The emperor possessed mystic power gained by his long practice of austerity. He was loath to waste that accumulated power on Ravan, but the demon had to be checked. The dying king could at least do something before he departed. Anaranya fixed his gaze on the Lord of the Rakshasas and, concentrating his mind, uttered a curse. In the very line you now deride, O Ravan, soon there will appear a king who will kill you and all your race. As Anaranya spoke, the sound of kettle drums was heard resounding in the sky, and a shower of celestial flowers fell upon Anaranya. Heavenly voices were heard to say, "It shall be so." Having delivered his curse, the emperor slumped to the ground, his life spent. Before the eyes of the demon, Anaranya left his body and rose upwards to the heavens, his ethereal form glowing like fire. Ravan snorted derisively. Who cared for the curse of some puny being? What human could ever kill him? He only bothered fighting with them by way of idle sport. Anaranya's curse was simply the insane words of a dying man. It could never come to pass. If any king dared challenge him, they would meet the same end as this one here. As for the celestial voices, well, he would soon deal with those arrogant deities. The demon again mounted the Pushpaka, which was stationed in the sky. Not being interested in pillaging the paltry wealth of a human city, he left and soared up into the heavens. Perhaps there were some gods around who could put up a better fight. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Part 5. Ravan Rapes Rambha. Ravan went up to the heavenly planets, inhabited by the principal gods. But the gods swiftly ran away, unwilling to encounter him in battle. They knew of the inviolable boons of Lord Brahma. It was pointless fighting this demon. The gods prayed to Vishnu, hiding themselves in fear. Ravan decided to rest for a while in heaven. He went to Amaravati, the city of Indra, king of the gods. As the Rakshasa was seated in the celestial Nandana gardens, he saw an Apsara, a heavenly nymph named Rambha. The face of that celestial girl shone with incomparable beauty, and she was adorned with bright garlands and jewels. Her soul-captivating eyes glanced here and there, and her fleshy hips swayed as she moved. Ravana gazed upon her large round breasts and shapely thighs, her hands soft like rose petals, pulled her shining blue dress tight around her body as she saw the demon staring at her. Ravana assumed a godly form of great splendor, concealing his terrible ten-headed body. He sprang to his feet and quickly went over to Rambha, immediately taking her by the hand. Completely overcome by lust, he smiled at the celestial girl. "Where do you go? And who do you belong to, O lovely lady? Who will today enjoy the nectar of your soft red lips? Who will be blessed by the touch of your tender breasts? Which fortunate man will lie tightly embraced by you, his mind completely captured by carnal delights?" Ravana was not at all concerned whether she was married or not. He had stolen the wives of gods, Gandharvas, and demons everywhere, taking them to Lanka to enjoy and be his harem. The Rakshasa was accustomed to having his way and spoke only in an attempt to win over Rambha. He praised her divine beauty and told her of his own power and glory. Why, what woman would refuse the opportunity to become the consort of the mighty Ravan? But the beautiful girl did not reciprocate his advances. She pulled away from him, her bright bracelets falling to the ground as she wrestled herself from Ravan's grasp. Folding her palms and looking down, she addressed the Rakshasa reproachfully. "Please, do not speak in this way. I am as good as your daughter, and therefore deserve to be protected by you, O Ravan. Why, indeed, I am the wife of another." Rambha told him she was married to a demigod, Nalakuvra, who was the son of Kuvera, Ravan's own brother. She was thus related to Ravan, and so he should not make amorous advances towards her. But Ravana laughed loudly. He had no regard whatsoever for any moral codes. He moved towards Rambha, who ran behind a golden bush. Ravana pursued her, pulling off his red silk robes and revealing his immense lustrous body. Rambha tried to evade him, dodging here and there with her garland and necklaces swinging. but it was useless. Taking hold of Rumba, the Rakshasa forcibly laid her across a nearby rock. He snatched off her garments and began ravishing her. His eyes expanded in delight. Rumba cried out for help, but seeing the fierce Rakshasa, no one dared to intervene. The demon's powerful hands pinned the white arms of the maiden against the rock. Her dark hair fell in disarray, its golden clasp and flowers dislodged. Ravana violently molested her in front of his demon followers. Although she begged him to desist, the Rakshasa took that struggling heavenly girl against her desire. After Ravana had sated his lust, he stood up, fastening his waistcloth. Shedding tears, Rumba backed away from the demon and fled. Her clothes torn and her garlands crushed, she went before her husband. And when he saw her in that condition, Nalakuvara became infuriated. But when he heard that it was Ravan who had raped her, he felt helpless. The demon had already defeated Nalakuvara's powerful father, who was supported by innumerable Yaksha warriors. There was no possibility of facing Ravana in a fight. Nalakuvara considered the situation carefully. Although he could not fight the demon, he could at least curse him as a result of his evil act. The righteous curses of the gods invoke the infallible power of Vishnu. Considering this the only means of punishing Ravan, Nalakuvara touched holy water and then uttered his imprecation malediction curse. This evil Rakshasa has violated a celestial lady. If he ever again rapes another maiden, he will immediately fall dead. Ravan soon heard of the curse. He had seen such curses made by gods and rishis, and they had come to pass many times. Once uttered, they could not be retracted. Although he did not like to accept it, Ravana could understand that some powerful force maintained the universal order and laws. Thinking it possible that Nalakuvara's words might just be effective, he decided not to again force himself upon another female. Better not to take any chances. After all, there were enough women who would willingly accept him. Being disappointed that no gods would fight with him, Ravan left the heavenly planets. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.